Blog Talk Radio.
Pursuit is what we try to complement and accelerate here for all of our listeners, is that the question, when we start asking questions, we start to arrive at answers. And sometimes and often, there are partial answers, and sometimes the questions need to be asked two or three times before we develop something as comprehensive that settles our curiosity. But it also leaves us with that, I don't know, is it a doubting mind or that questioning mind? Is that all there is? But our intelligence suggests to us that keeping an open mind is always wise, because the laws of probability don't really care whether we're a fine fellow or intelligent or thoughtless. Those laws are like the laws of nature that are in at play when hurricanes and floods come. And now we're hearing about massive heat waves. Imagine Australia just recently had a temperature of 48.9 degrees. The temperatures are rising, and we've had this predicted for some time. Even as the science is catching up with the evidence of research, even as experiences, we look out the window, we're seeing the changes occur. might be disingenuous for anybody to claim that it's not a concern. Certainly, if you're somebody who grows crops to feed the rest of us, it's a concern. And for us who need those crops, it's a concern. We've done our best with the oceans, haven't we? Overfishing, and we knew that. This is not new. Sociology was studying this for at least back into the early 70s. And what we're not overfishing, we seem to be killing by other means. Always, we can claim, unintended. But, you know, we've saturated our oceans with garbage, particularly plastics, and killing the wildlife. Not a whole lot has changed yet. Attitude has changed. Young people are becoming concerned. Always, we saw the attitude change being fostered with young children. Imagine, this is 2019, and we have people out there called anti-vaxxers. Don't want their children vaccinated. You know, I'm not as intelligent as they are. They're more miles ahead of the likes of me. But even, you know, all the old farmers would do what's best for their herds to have safe and productive animals, livestock around. If I'm part of that major herd, 7 billion of us, 7.5 billion of us, if we don't take care of ourselves, well, nature's going to take care of us for sure. We can prolong a little bit of the agony. But all of that aside, you're here, I hope, to lean in a little bit, to share some of the more intimate conversations that occurred around masonry and spurred the idea, developed the idea of masonry so very, very long ago. It wasn't somebody preaching from the rooftops or using headlines in a broadsheet. Some thoughtful conversation. And you know, when we can be contemplative, not when we have to force it. This is like opera. I like it, but not every day. No, some days I do, all days, but I like to have the choices and variation. Masonry is like that. There's facets to it. It's easy to envision as a gemstone with many, many facets. And your curiosity isn't about right and wrong. The answers that you seek may have more to do with accuracy. And if you're any sloppy about your work, if your calculations are loose, you will at some level look in the mirror and know that of yourself. But the rightness is within your own mind, whether that's ego or what. Because there's a legitimacy to the way that each and every Mason looks at the craft. It's a bit of the silly beggar that we play sometimes. We need some degree of uniformity, but when you think about it, we're developing character. And what works for one person in the development of character does not necessarily transpose to the next fellow. However, along comes Freemasonry. Now, all of what we talk about here on Masonic Effects has little to do with the secret. Now, you'll understand what the secret is about, what the secrets, what the mystery is about. And if you can't, well, Masonry is there. Do a little bit of a deep dive and you'll find what you need. The craft is provides a framework for change. I've often said that I'm a more conservative Mason than I care to admit sometimes, although I tend to think that I have a lot of ideas that challenge the status quo. That's just the way I am. No, it's not the way I am. It's what we need to do. We need to be adaptive, if I've read our history correctly. And we need to be respectful of our history. We do move forward. We do move forward. But before we go any further, fill up your glass, maybe refreshing the ice in your whiskey, or you can join me. I'm having my trend has been to sit down with a cup of espresso and to enjoy the program. And life is good. We have a good selection of music to go along with the commentary. The case for strong ritual. Theater matters. And I hope I've set your mind at ease a little bit over the course of the next hour with some good jazz. And do I have to apologize for the poet selection for today? Yes, you guess it's one of my favorites. No, it's not Kipling. No, it's not Shakespeare. It's Alexander Pushkin. I really admire the way the man thinks. You know, the way he approached poetry and us. What he's trying to express. We're out of all of this vastness. It may be daunting for you, in some ways, as it is for all of us, I guess. Let me try to curate a bit of Freemasonry for the next little while and share those moments. Here's something I think worth sharing. This is from work done, recording done in 23rd of July of 1957. It's a good year for Chevrolet. And the musicians are Oscar Peterson, Herb Ellis, Ray Brown, can you imagine, and Louis Belton. And the performance is by none other than Ella Fitzgerald. Yeah. These foolish things. Wow.
Oh, will you never set me free? The ties that bound us are still around us. There's no escape that I can see. And still those little things remain that bring me happiness or pain. A cigarette that bends, a lipstick traces, an airline ticket to romantic places, and still my heart is weighing. These foolish things remind me of you. A tinkling piano in the next apartment. Those stumbling words that told you what my heart meant. A fairground's painted flame. These foolish things remind me of you. You came. You conquered me. When you did that to me, I knew somehow this had to be. The winds of March that make my heart a dancer. A telephone that rings But who's to answer? Oh, how the ghost of your claim, these foolish things remind me of you. First daffodils and long excited cables and candlelight on little corner tables, and still my heart has waged, these foolish things remind me of you. The park at evening when the bell had sounded, the yearly France with all the girls around it, the beauty that is free, these foolish things remind me of you. How strange, how sweet to find you still. These things are dear to me. They seem to bring you near to me. The sigh of midnight trains and empty stations, silk stockings thrown aside, dance invitations. Oh, how the ghost of you claims these foolish things remind me of you. Gardenia perfume,
intoxicating. Some of those simple things, beautiful, makes us remember that we're alive. Life is more than existing, living. I'm going to share a commentary for today, like I always do. But I want you to I want to bring something up with you before you do. And I know it goes without saying. I think of Masonic Effects as presenting a banquet for guests every week, checking with diets and without checking, all those peculiarities. I hope that it's compatible. But one thing that particularly in our in the craft is this notion of umbrage. I had the good fortune of sitting with a couple of more aggressive Masons the other day, and they took umbrage with everything and anything, it seemed to me, as we sat down together. Just general scan. They were complaining and they bounced off each other. I realized that, as one old decree elder had taught me, that even these folks have a purpose, that they're to teach us something. My lesson here was, what kind of wreckage happens when umbrage takes over our thinking? When we sit, when we sit on the edge of our seat, anticipating some wrongdoing, then we walk into a room with an assumption, and it consumes the tone of everything that we say and think. Tone, the tone of your voice, the tone of your mind, it has a direct impact on the meaning of what we say and how we come across. It's the difference between saying something lightly and saying something in a menacing, demeaning way. So, as you approach your next lodge and meeting and the one after that, the gatherings of brethren, or in general, be mindful of, keep umbrage where it belongs, somewhere else. Think of yourself as sitting down at a meal that's been prepared carefully by a young couple that are trying to impress on you, maybe your relatives, maybe not, or a good chef that are trying to show you that their preparation is an expression of how much they care about you. If we don't apply filters, then we can have that withering effect. And you've sat next to somebody like that, something wonderful is going on, and they have that demeaning kind of a manner. You know, it's okay, but it could be better. You know, that kind of meagerness. We see that in some parents. You got an A, but it could have been an A plus. That's nothing heroic in that kind of statement. That's nonsense. It's weakness. The character, people building character and a system building character relies on us doing it all. Squaring off the corners, no, that's not corny. That has meaning. When we compromise one element of the work, and we know when we study the ritual and rubric and we look at our history, we know how we're supposed to conduct ourselves. And when we look around, we can tell. When we're alone with our own thoughts, we know exactly whether we're cutting it off at the corners or whether we're doing it right. Each time we compromise, you and I have cracked that code that is within masonry necessary for the improvement of character. Only when we do it, it's with guesswork. We're never sure what the impact of the compromise will be. Oh, don't flap your hands and be angry with me. Take a look in the mirror and think about this. Either we don't have a choice. It's not like we do it right or we don't. It's like we don't have a choice. At least if your obligations and your word matter, and I presume they matter deeply and a great deal. For some of us, it defines us. It's important. The compromise, no. Don't be thinking that because you reach a certain level of insight that the world around you is going to walk in that same path. No. With insight comes an awareness and a need for tolerance. For those days when you begin to see things as they truly are, not to go along with what's popular. Let's cut corners, but as long as we cut corners, I heard this idiot, and I say idiot being quite cautious, it was somebody involved with a fascist movement a long, long time ago. He said, well, when you say a lie once, it remains a lie. But when you say it a thousand times, say a lie a thousand times, it becomes the truth. Well, we need to be able to be candid with ourselves, not the approximation. This is where just showing the sums without showing the work, it does matter. We have to show the work. It helps us to get where we need to go, where we say we want to go. Maybe that's a truth all on its own. The case for strong ritual, theater matters. Let me see if I can convince you today of an option. The etiquette of masonry would seem obvious to a casual onlooker. Underlying that is what I think we call symbolic manners. 14th century notes reveal proceedings of a Scottish lodge from a nation in which king was an authority declared over the land, but not the people. In England, a king or queen was about subjects and land. It makes me think that the early Scottish lodge is operating where 13th and 14th century legends William Wallace and Robert the Bruce represented the primacy of a man. So the independence of a lodge would never be in doubt. Disingenuous to question the merit of Grand Lodge institutions. Freemasonry is not troubled, but confusion is out there where answers are being sought about 21st century relevance and performance of the order. What has this to do with independent or constitutional legitimacy is everything. Few of us who would think to serve warm beer to a guest are tolerant of insensitivity in a lodge. In Mason speak, the most thoughtful gesture of sincerity is good ritual. Poor work reveals too much. We can be part of a great organization by performance, but membership does not change our nature. So what bearing does this have in the broader role of masonry? Everything. Our rationalization does not matter a fig to a curious, high-performing man. This is where each one of us can change the narrative. However you say it, any less than fine work cannot be accepted. Not everybody is capable. It takes ability. Ignoring this has consequences, and many lodges are experiencing those consequences firsthand. This is why our ritual is carefully worked to ensure a continuous current. It takes effort and commitment by all of us all the time. When we are successful, we present masonry, our lodges, our membership, and our sensitivity to a guest in the best possible light. This is where we reignite and inspire. Then or now, which local custom to follow? Thank you. Imagine having a job as a poet, a playwright, and a novelist. Imagine how wonderful that must be. No, we don't have to be snooty about it. We can praise our authors. There's many, many brilliant authors around, and there's poets and poet laureates. And whether we pick up their book or read their work, it reflects more on us. Oh, the herd mentality is quite strong. You know, the having our news selected for us, it seems a little bit sketchy, doesn't it? We do lose a sense of objectivity. And oh, I wish that social media did not erode the sense of compassion and empathy. I wish it was simply, but life is not just a flow of consciousness. It's not like it's somebody else telling me what I should think next or what's important to do next. It's like I have a hard enough time sorting that out myself, and so do you. But it can be quite confusing if that's all that you've known. And that this thinking that somebody sitting down and curating, somebody selecting your news can do a better job of it. And not only that, but you know they have to put a spin on it one way or the other. So how do we know what's really, you know, unvarnished? I like to say, quote Margaret Macmillan, the great historian, the unvarnished, that gets closer to the truth. It's your opinion and my opinion and something in the middle, the truth. There's all these opinions, all valid. Along comes Pushkin, a poet. If you're at all fans of opera, his works, Eugene Onegin, The Captain's Daughter, Boris Godunov, and Ruslan and Ludmila, if you're, just remember the passion and these works. Well, we're going to share another little piece today of his. This is, of course, This is a piece that he wrote in 1816, sorry. And it's called The Truth. Simple. From ancient times, sages were seeking for the forgotten truth's footprints. For they and long were loud speaking their usual speeches of old flints. They were repeating, the truth treasure had hidden self into a well. And drinking water all together were crying, there, we'll find it well. But someone faithful, friends of mortals, maybe Silin, this person was, the witness of their disputes, thoughtless, had tired of water and of noise, left all attempts to find the holly and thought about wine the first, and having drunk a bowl whole, saw on its bottom the truth. Lost.
Thank you.
think? Do you think we'd like to sit down with Al Cohn and have a talk with him after he's played that for us? Almost makes you want to focus on something so your thoughts just drift along with the music. Step back for a second. So we can think about, open our minds a bit to, just a bit, to the information that is packaged for us in these little explosions of information we call symbols. We've just compressed. You're the black hole. You're the one that's drawing all that information together. Oh. And for what reason? What can you do with it? Oh, what happens if you've gone down the rabbit hole with the rest of us and you're curious about the effects of, you know, self-improvement? Oh, don't blush. Nobody's going to put you on the spot. Nobody's going to ask you if you understand the reason for any of this. Whether you do or not will be evident by your actions and what you say and what you don't say. Just like the rest of us. It's not a matter of pointing fingers. It's a matter of reflections in that mirror that we all eventually have to look into. And if our answer is a bumper sticker, well, it matters more how we came to that. How we came to that, you know, elevator ride explanation of the order. I guess a thoughtful man would say that masonry is a good time. It's interesting. It creates a sense of purpose, awareness within us. It's not to say that it's predominant. No. Why we struggle with that appetite for notoriety. We like to be not too much notorious, I guess, but we like to be noticed. Everybody likes to be noticed. Everybody likes to feel important in their own way, or in some cases, self-important or narcissistic. But we struggle with that because our values are different. Remember, we're to close our eyes, we're to open our eyes, we're to listen very carefully, and we're to stop talking. Oh, it means that other people are the center, in a way. Nothing I find thrills me more than having read something that quotes and refers to somebody that I just adore, William, and this is from W.L. Wilmshurst's work. I just always want to have this sense that a long time ago that I wanted to sit down with him and pour us a few whiskeys and argue and debate and carry on and agree with him. I just found him fascinating. I'm sharing with you some work. So I doubt that many of us will be able to sit down and study this. But collectively, we share it. You can turn this off and go away, but to get exposure to some deep material. This is from the work Symbolism in Craft Masonry, and it's written by kind of an interesting guy. The past assistant grand director of ceremonies, Colin F.W. Dyer. He was a master of the Coronati Quattro Coronati Lodge between 1975 and 1976. All that means is that the peers in that group are cautious and thoughtful, and you know your chops before you're accepted in as a voting member. That's how they have maintained a reputation for the precision of their work. Oh, I see the smug little sock puppets that will pop up and disagree with everything, but this is the kind of material where it's a matter of absorbing it. Not a matter of necessarily agreeing with it, but what's it telling us? And if it stretches us out of our comfort zone, so much the better. It's like calculus. So he says here, W. L. Wilmshurst sees a special significance in the various positions of the square and compasses. Now I'm trying hard not to flog that old dead horse. Been done? Oh my. But let's see if we can't elevate the conversation a little bit. You decide. In the concealment of the lower points of the compasses beneath the square lies a most instructive lesson. Thereby is implied that man's immortal and powerful spirit is at present overlain and prevented from full function by the contrary tendencies of his mortal material body. In Masonry, this position must become reversed. If man is to be perfected and rise to the full height and possibilities of his being, his spiritual principle must not remain subordinated to the flesh, but gain ascendancy over them. This the Mason is taught to achieve for himself, and in proportion as he subdues his lower nature, will he liberate the powers and faculties of his immortal spirit and rise to mastership over all that is fleshy and material in himself. Ascendancy. Awareness. Reason. Being able to reason through things. Doesn't necessarily make us supreme, but it does end some of the struggle with it that occurs within us because of ignorance. It's like when a group decision, a collective decision is brought up, and it's somewhat important to a lodge. You will often see members lose their self-control. They become aggressive or loud, or they may even become intemperate, or they show their anxieties in many different ways. Yes, it is a display of anxiety. And then there will always be this group that are more inclined to listen and then put a pin in it and move on. If we select people that don't have self-control to make decisions, then we should expect the decisions to reflect what they are and what they are not. Being thoughtful doesn't mean necessarily that we're ridiculous. Here. And the position of the great lights. Now I'll draw on your good nature to understand and appreciate this, where somebody else who's not a Mason won't necessarily have a clue. They'll be left to look at the shadows on the back of the cave wall without really understanding the reality. Yeah, but that's always been the case with Freemasonry, isn't it? The secrets of the order remain. Here. in private lodges in the English Constitution. The general rule is for the three great lights to be placed on the master's pedestal, and when the lodge is open, the square and compasses are placed on the volume of the sacred law. In Grand Lodge and in provincial and district Grand Lodges, this does not necessarily apply. And certainly in Grand Lodge, the great lights are on a separate pedestal in front of that of the Grand Master, although it has been suggested that this has a practical application for making more room for the Grand Master's papers. In a number of private lodges, the custom is for the pedestal in front of the master to be at some distance from him towards the center of the lodge, and for the great lights to be on this pedestal. This practice is a continuation from times before 1813 in England, when the great lights in the lodges under the ancients' Grand Lodge were displayed on an altar in the center of the lodge room, or near to that point, while the modern's lodge used the pedestal in front of the master. In modern's lodges, obligations were taken by the candidate being brought up to the master's pedestal, while in ancient's lodges, the master left his place and went to the candidate. And here in Upper Canada, I expect all good Masons are leaning in going, I didn't know that. This difference in practice has also given two methods for the actual opening of the volume, either placed so as to be able to be read by the master, or by a candidate opposite the master. The symbolism of the open volume, so far as the moderns were concerned, was that the master's duty was to instruct his brethren, and to instruct them in those tenets contained in the Bible. To do this, the Bible must be placed so that he could read it, and it would be in that position the whole time that the lodge was open. If a ceremony requiring an obligation was worked, then the candidate went to the pedestal and placed his hand on the Bible. It was not in the lodge just for the taking of obligations. It was there as God's word and for the master to instruct from. So that the fact that the volume was upside down to the candidate was of no significance. In the case of the first obligation in an ancient's lodge, the Bible was not left on the pedestal for this. It was taken by the master to the candidate, resting on his hand and the other hand there. Circumstances were different here, for the Bible was not in its position for the master to instruct from. It was put to a specific separate use. It was therefore customary for it to be placed on the candidates so that he could read from it. In the rearrangement after 1813, although all obligations were to be taken with the volume remaining on the pedestal, and the question of which the way the volume should be placed depended on the previous allegiance of the lodge concerned. If it was from the ancients, the book would face away from the master. If from the moderns, it would face toward him. There is no absolute standard working in the English Constitution, and there can be some latitude in matters of this nature. And as different workings have developed, some follow one practice and some the other. One thing has been decreed by a Grand Director of Ceremonies, that the position of the square and compasses is with the square at the bottom of the page, whichever way the book faces. Imagine that. Imagine connecting what we do with that time, 1813. You'll all know the significance of that time. So a Google scurry to find that out. It's interesting. Check it out. And that connection. I like being connected with history, don't you? All of these details and doing it according to the way we're supposed to do it. It's like, it makes sense. I wouldn't expect you to go to a pianist for lessons, and the pianists only show you how to do half the scales, or to do it very sloppily, or that rehearsal and practice doesn't matter. I wouldn't expect that, would you? Put yourself in those shoes. If I was standing next to my friend Chris and he's teaching me how to cast a fly into this beautiful trout stream, full of all of these well-heeled fly fishermen, and he opens up his small box and takes out exactly the right flies for the hatch that was happening that morning, and we are standing there pulling out browns to our heart's content. Yes, catch and release. It's like we've used study, haven't we? We've used insight. It matters. Whether you're standing there in the stream, just absolutely enjoying it, and other people are scratching their heads, but they've read the book and they have the guide with them. As the mist comes off the river, as the day awakens, we keep popping those little browns into our nets. Too much fun today. Thank you very much for joining. I hope you find a couple of your friends or a friend or a mason that is like you, curious enough to lean in and have a relaxing conversation, and that appreciates the atmosphere that you'll create for them. Make it comfortable. Share a pint, share a whiskey, share a glass of wine, share a glass of spring water. Maybe it's a walk through the woods, or sitting on a park bench, or being there with somebody in the hospital bed. Where did we lean in first? And what did we talk about? Well, all of this learning, all of this material, whether your tendency is toward philosophy or history or symbolism, all of it is the currency of Freemasonry. That is the subtext of what we do. Freemasonry is not a spectator sport, is it? It's not only a pleasure, and I don't say that to be disingenuous or because it's a formula. I like talking to you every week, and I like sharing these ideas. I'd like to think that they're all mine, but they're not. But they just seem to make good sense. I like Dyer's work. We'll continue with it again. Tiptoe through ceremonies and some of the things we wear, some of our regalia, Masonic clothing. I look forward to being with you again. I hope I've stimulated a bit of thinking. But you already knew that. You're already doing that on your own. We'll leave you with music that conveys the thought. This is Ron Carter, The Shadow of Your Smile. Take care of each other and take care of yourselves and commit those acts of random Masonic kindness and make it all look easy, for goodness sakes. See ya.
Thank you.